Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Hope that you are having a good time. I imagine a lot of folks getting out for lunch or what have you. Appreciate you doing that. If you don't know, I got a little gift for you. His name is B. Scott. He's in for the OG John Lopez. And then also Figgy Fig, always still here. And B. Scott, they not with you on there. They said these old people need to go retire. Stop calling these games.
Right. Y'all don't have no respect for your elders. Hey. I understand. It's okay.
Get out of here, Jim Lampley.
Let me be the only one raised right around here. That's fine.
We need more Spiro Didis.
I want to know, who do y'all like? Who do they like? If you want the Mike Breens and stuff out of here.
Yeah, in the basketball space, it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
Like, because some of these guys are incredible. But yeah, who are the young guys? I mean, maybe Spiro Didis, who was on the call for Rockets Warriors yesterday, and he's not going to be, because it's going to be on ESPN on Friday, but I was like, if he was on again, it wouldn't hurt. Like, keep everything the same.
Yes.
After an incredible victory over the Warriors.
Mark Jones?
Yeah. Like for me, and maybe, again, I think I was getting a little bit sentimental, but the voices that I'm, and Lampley, I think, falls in this line, and it, boxing is more specific in this way, but the voices that I like and the voices that I'm comfortable with, I'm willing to go with those. I think I am getting at that age where, and figure you as a music guy can maybe even appreciate this. I know you listen to new music, but I'm like, I think I'm at that age where I'm only really wanting to listen to the songs that I already know.
Oh, you're out of the new find. I always find that fascinating, right? What is the age at which you are no longer discovering? You are simply operating with what you already know.
And it's fine. Like, I am cool with discovering, but I also still prefer protect your neck.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
over whatever it is.
I'm kind of at that age now, too. Like, it take me a lot to get outside of my regular bag. Because a lot of the times people be like, oh, have you heard this new artist? And I'm just like, I don't feel like trying to find a new artist or listen. I like to listen to what I know makes me comfortable. Yes. It gets me hype.
Yeah, it's like, what you mean this new artist from this new music from this new artist? This Big Crit is right here. What are you talking about?
Forever's a mighty long time,
man. Baby. Come on, man. I got this Devin the Dude, this Scarface in here jamming. I don't know what you're talking about.
It get to a point, man. I realize I listen to like the same 8 songs.
Oh, it can't be 8. That's
wild. It's more than 8.
So yeah, I'm guessing y'all, I've kind of moved out of this over the last year or so, but y'all not waiting for New Music Friday, I guess, is what I'm hearing.
I am willing to participate in it. I'm just not waiting for it.
If it's my artist, an artist that I'm comfortable with, then I would check out the new stuff, but it's just a new artist, like different type of artist. Be like, oh, you got to check him. I'm just like, like I don't feel like it right now.
I mean,
now.
I'm still on Hip Hop DX, which is where I get my new releases from, and I see them.
God, that's so backpacker.
Yeah.
So backpacker.
I'm still with it. I'm just like, oh, you know what, though? I see that new release, but I'm going to go jam that old one.
Okay.
Oh, Benny the Butcher's got something new out. Ooh. But you know what? I liked what he put out back in 2018. So I'm good.
Okay. Oh, wow. We got 38. Unless I'm put on, I never find new stuff. And from the 512, hip hop and rap sucks now. I think it's a flooded market.
People been saying that for like 20 years.
That's
now,
true,
man.
That might be the ultimate indicator that you are old. And I don't say that
hip-hop
with judgment.
Hip-hop is dead.
Yeah, it depends on what you're listening to. And I know we're on the radio, but I think radio's got a lot to do with that.
We don't got time to break that
down.
I'm
just saying, sometimes we're not giving you the best of.
What we do have time to break down. Talking about a new Music Friday, new Hoop Friday, as the Rockets still in this thing in the first round versus the Warriors. It is a Friday night extravaganza, Game 6 in San Francisco. The Rockets will go again, Game 6. Game five was fun, though. What did game five make you feel more confident about their chances in game six, especially as they return back on the road? Like, it felt like they found a comfort in the confines of Toyota Center. What are the things that you think are sustainable and translate back to game six?
It made me feel more confident just in the sense that I wasn't confident at all going into the game that they would win it. Like, I figured that the Golden State Warriors had figured the Rockets out, and the Rockets, at least, for all of the matchup advantages that I've been saying since before the series started, for all of the matchup advantages that I felt like they had, I did not feel like they had figured the Warriors out. And so given that, and given how, look, they had their opportunities to win and couldn't figure it out in Golden State, I didn't feel great about their chances going into last night's game. Based off of how they played on both ends of the floor yesterday or last night, it's hard to ignore the way that it seems like this series could have easily turned if they stay true to some of the things that they did. And what are those things? Number one, the defense on Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler. That's the biggest thing, Reggie, that I'm looking to see how much of this can transfer to Golden State, because I don't expect them to shoot as poorly as they did in this game.
Or as well as they did in this game, I'm guessing you mean.
No.
Oh, the Warriors shooting. Got you.
I don't expect, let me be clear, I don't expect Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler to perform offensively as poorly as they did in game five.
I'm following you now.
However, I do believe that the defense that Amen Thompson is playing on Steph Curry and the overall team defense that they're playing on Steph Curry, I should say, and the individual defense that Dylan Brooks is playing on Jimmy Butler are things that are sustainable, even if they're not sustainable to the level that they were in game five. So I'm wanting to see, what is the give and take? What is the variance? What is the difference between the excellent performance that we saw in game five and what I don't feel like can expect to be the exact same in game six, but will they have enough to handle it? And then the other part, so that's on defense. Offensively, we saw from the start of the game, this team being decisive, moving the ball around, reading the defense well, themselves moving around. That's something that they did in this game. That's something that they did a good job, I thought, in game two. I think Jalen Green is somebody that's not going to get enough credit for this past game because he didn't have a big scoring output and he got injured a little bit and didn't play as much. But I thought he did a good job of helping set the tone in this game.
Can I press pause real quick?
Go ahead.
How concerned are you about the Jalen Green knock, right? It's a knee. That's a very vital part of an explosive gentleman. He ended up getting back in that game and playing. And, I mean, it seemed like he was fine. I imagine that in any circumstance, a dude's going to wipe away. Any concerns about that? Is that how you feel just generally?
So I'm concerned about the impact that it's going to have on him. Not concerned about whether it's going to keep him out, because this is, you know, for as skinny as he is and for all the jokes that people might have about this, has been sort of an iron. This guy's not soft. Like, you might want to think that, but he's not. He plays every game for the most part, plays through pain and injury, so I do expect him to play. I do wonder, to your point, the explosion, a guy that relies on, like, that being his mismatch, his athleticism, the fact that it's so difficult to stay in front of him. I do wonder if that's going to hamper him at all, especially given that you only, even for a young guy, that you only get the one day to rest. So yeah. I am worried about that. But as far as game five goes, I thought you saw a much, much better version of him. Is he going to be able to do that on the road? And I keep going back to how much he has struggled over time against the Warriors. Has he figured something out? Or has he simply, like, just slowed it down a little bit? I talked to him about this after game one, after he had a disastrous game one, before he responds in game two, talking about just taking my time. This is a quote from him. I've got to take my time. He seems to be doing that a little bit more. So can he take that to the road? I don't feel like we've seen enough of it. And this injury is going to be kind of an interesting caveat on how much is that going to limit him. But just overall as a team, though, it's not just Jalen Green. Mm-hmm. It's them overall as a team not feeling like they've got a whole lot of answers or ideas on exactly what to do or what they're trying to accomplish on a given possession.
Can I tell you the thing there's one thing that's very obvious that is not sustainable from the Rockets perspective, and that is shooting the ever-living you-know-what out of the basketball. At half, they were shooting 69.4% from the field, which is decidedly very nice, and then 60% from deep. In that, like, you look at the shot chart where you look at the various different shot zones
yep.
Against league average, they were more than 10% above average in every spot except for the right corner. Like, they were shooting the lights out. And I think one of the things that that does, especially, I know Ime was talking about this after the game. Apologies, Figgy, that I didn't ask for the audio here, because Ime was asked about, like, what, you know, helped their defense. It's like, hey, man, making them get the ball out of the net as opposed to getting rebounds, getting in transition. Like, what happens, or how do you see this playing, especially on the road here, if, I mean, if you're not going to shoot, and I don't think you are going to shoot so well as to where the offense then applies a level of pressure to the Warriors, even also allowing you to get back and set up defensively in the half court. Like, what shifts in getting maybe Steph Curry going or getting Jimmy Butler going if they're having more transition opportunities?
Yeah, it's what makes the matchup so fascinating to me, because we just identified two things that feel anomalous. It is a really hot shooting Rockets night and a really poor shooting combined between their top two players and Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler. Both things feel anomalous. Like, you don't feel like you can rely on the Rockets to shoot lights out on a night-to-night basis, and you don't feel comfortable with the idea of Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler struggling to the degree that they did. However, you do feel like the defense that the Rockets play is very real. So here's my question. Are they going to be able to, and I think that there's a chance that they could, and I'll be interested to watch this tomorrow night, but is Amen Thompson disrupting Steph Curry's dribble the way that he was early on in that game, causing him to be, I don't want to even say careless with the ball, but sort of just forcing the issue and just being special and dynamic in the way that he is, forcing turnovers, 5 steals in the first half. I don't know if I can expect Amen Thompson to have 5 steals, but is his defense similarly disruptive, even if Steph Curry is making a few more shots than he was? And I do feel like the Warriors, not just Steph Curry, but multiple Warriors missed some pretty good looks last night, and that worked in the Rockets' advantage. But what happens when, even if the defense is sustainable, and I believe it is, what happens when Steph Curry's making a few more shots and those same shots that were going down for you at Toyota Center are not necessarily going down for you at Chase Center? Do you start to kind of deviate and go away from what was working and what clearly works offensively,
yeah,
and start leaning back into your bad habits? Or do you stick with it and read what the Warriors are doing? And also, are you able to kind of withstand the inevitable Steph Curry run or inevitable Warriors run that you could expect to happen at some point at Chase Center?
Right. I think I lean towards them finding a level of calm. I think that has been a large undercurrent in this series for the Rockets, is finding a level of calm within the storm that is playoff basketball, with all of the emotions and energy and, you know, different, like, just the different nature and different characteristics of these games. We talked about it with the men. We've talked about it with Jalen Green. Fred VanVleet spoke to it. He vocalized kind of the ways in which some of his teammates are finding that stabilization. So I think that as the series goes along, as it shortens up in you know, days between games, and that kind of wears on the Warriors, I think the additional portion of that is the Rockets find a level of stability there. Can I speak to you about this, though, when you talk about sustainability? There was a point in time where these Rockets were 13 for 13 from the free throw line and ultimately finished 84%. From the free throw line. And the reason why I bring this up is, one, to acknowledge that after me and Lopez spent all up and down saying, all right, maybe it's not reasonable to expect them to shoot well, they said, hey, y'all, shut y'all up. You know, shut up, right? We can do this. How comfortable do you feel that they're going to shoot that well from the free throw line continuing?
It's hard to pretend like I feel great about it, because they've been a poor free throw shooting team throughout. So it's not like this just showed up in the playoffs. It's unfortunate that it did show up in the playoffs. And we're really talking about, I think, those two games in Golden State that really stand out, where they miss double-digit number of free throws.
Right.
And it's just – and you lose by single digits, or you lose by 3 points. You're like, okay, well, there's the game right there. So I can't pretend like I feel great about it, but I do want to speak to the importance. Like, I don't think we can talk about that enough, of winning the game in the margins or along the margins, and then also specifically for a team – that's this offensively challenged or capable of going through the offensive lulls that they do, or even the fact that the shots that they get are not great, or that it seems so difficult, so hard for them to get good shots and good offense on a possession-to-possession basis. I don't feel like a team that's this offensively challenged, and this almost goes without saying, I just want to say it again, like, they can go or afford to to bypass free shots.
Yeah.
Like every easy bucket that you can get. So when they miss layups, that is maddening.
Correct.
Because they're a team that struggles to get good shots. A layup is a good shot.
It's a great shot. It's the best shot in basketball.
When you miss free, and free throws are pretty close right behind it because Correct. It's an uncontested shot from a decent distance. When you miss those, that is maddening because you're like, hey, it's already difficult enough to imagine where the offense is going to come from on a given possession, on a night-to-night basis, on a possession-to-possession basis. If you can't simply hit your free throws, this is an uphill stream here.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about margins, and I think this is a margin. And what's funny is I don't have the tools to get to this place, and I'm sure Lopez would be laughing. He might be laughing as he's listening right now. That I don't have the tools to actually find this. But one question I've asked myself is, especially with the ways in which he didn't do it last night, but Steph Curry can nuke you. The non-Steph Curry minutes matter so much. Yeah. Like when he is on the bench, can you make them pay for having to sit him down at times? And it felt like, and I'm working off the field because, again, I don't have the concrete numbers on this. It felt like they absolutely made the Warriors pay when Steph was on the bench, which they haven't done as much in this series. I'm very intrigued to see if they can continue to do that and apply pressure in that way, because that's a big margin thing for you. If you can find the places to get your runs, knowing that, as you said, Steph Curry's not going to shoot 4-for-12
right.
again. Or if he does, like it's unlikely at the very least, right? So at least counteracting whatever more juice they get from Steph Curry by when he's off the floor, gain all that and more back.
No, I think that's well said. I couldn't put it better myself. You got to 100% take advantage of the non-Steph Curry minutes. I would say, kind of taking it from a different angle, that if I'm being discouraged by something and you talk about non-Steph Curry minutes, like the fact that I understand it was the Rockets bench out there as well that was kind of giving up the goods last night. But the fact that their bench was able to do what they were able to do, albeit with you taking the foot off the gas, that they were able to do that at Toyota Center, what does that look like at Chase Center? The non-Curry minutes, the Curry minutes themselves. Like, I expect everyone to play better at home, talking about the Warriors. What does that look like? How do the Rockets respond to that? That everyone is going to be better, more than likely, at home?
Well, I think... All right, so this is a little bit of a take, but I think that what you saw is, and probably I would expect you to be more concerned that the starters came in and that lead did not like swell up immediately against
the Golden State Warriors backup. Yes, that part. Yes. Right?
But I think that's because, and I think we were texting about this a little bit, the Rockets have done so much to drill the game plan, like literally the way that they specifically have to guard the Warriors starters. When their backups came in, like, they're not playing in that same style.
Yeah.
So the Rockets are geared, and they've been playing, the starting Rockets have been playing this very particular brand of basketball that's necessary to beat Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green and Steph Curry and the like. And those guys aren't on the floor, and now you got Trayce Jackson-Davis and Moses Moody and these other folks doing different things.
Yeah.
Like, it's a change in the way that you were playing basketball that you didn't want to have to do, but, you know, Reed Shepard and Aaron Holiday and these folks weren't able to hold it down. So I think it looked worse than it probably was in my mind. But yeah, I think I'm very intrigued to see what of those things are sustainable. But I still feel like as you have gone through six games and you've been in them in all these games, and the ones that you've won in a way that feels relatively commanding, especially last night. It feels like you really do have a path forward, even as you're the team who is still down in the series 3-2.
Yeah, and you can do these things that you did at home on the road. Like, it doesn't have to be, hey, this was just because we were in the comfort of Toyota Center. Like, you should be able to take advantage of these matchups that you have defensively. You should be able to, you know, make the adjustment to the way that the Warriors are defending you. You've had five games to do it now. So I'm really interested to see how they respond and if they're ready for game six.
Very good, man. It's a fun weekend. Game six, Friday night. But the weekend is not just fun because of the Rockets. Also, we're proud to partner with the Insperity Invitational that's happening this weekend at the Woodlands Country Club Tournament. Of course, Steve Ackler, David Duvall, Ernie Els, John Daly, the most eccentric of them all. They're all going to be there, as well as other PGA Tour champions. Some of the best of that particular tour. They'll be at the course right here in town for an incredible weekend of championship golf, teeing off tomorrow. So entry to the tournament is free. Don't worry about paying nothing. You just got to make sure you get out there. And if you want to see score updates, tee times, weather notes, more information, head to InsperityInvitational.com. Coming up next, it is the time where we typically do our lunchtime confessions. And B. Scott here, he want to do some confessions. So we'll do that next.